the desert. It's the most mystical of the biomes, always has been. They don't have mirages in tundra or grasslands. You want weird, you want unearthly, you want supernatural? The desert is a good place to find it. By day, it lures you in with psychedelic off-world rock formations, and then tries to kill you with heat and rattlesnakes and scorpions. If you survive to nightfall, the temperature can plummet to below freezing. But you're never alone. There's always nocturnal company. Coyotes, mountain lions, Gila monsters. The desert has always been a magnet for kooks. From Charles Manson and his tribe of homicidal maniacs to Scientology's L. Ron Hubbard and JPL co-founder Jack Parsons. Together, those guys would visit the high desert north of Los Angeles, where they attempted to conjure demons. There were unconfirmed rumors of sacrificing a virgin. Virgins were uncommon in L.A., even in the 1940s. The Bible had the desert well categorized. Satan stood on a mountain peak in a desert and offered Jesus all the kingdoms of the world if he'd worship him. That bargain was never struck, but it said quite a lot about who actually runs those kingdoms, didn't it? But psychos, kooks, and Satan aside, the desert offers something no other terrain can. Dark, clear skies. Observatories are built in deserts. Negligible light pollution and insignificant humidity makes for incomparable stargazing. But as I just discovered on a recent trip to Arizona, there's a lot more up there than stars and planets, meteorites, aircraft and satellites. Those things are easily seen and identified. I saw some things that were none of the above. UFOs, or as the government now likes to call them, UAPs, or unidentified aerial phenomena. Which automatically enrolls me in a special and growing club. People who have seen a UFO from the ground with the naked eye. I wish I had recorded myself as I did, because I was shouting, "Holy shit," so loudly, the coyotes stopped yipping. Hang on. I'll tell you what happened next.
The safari park.
You're killing me, Larry!
Larry. Fucking Larry.
Larry from That Larry Show.
For men with balls.
Take off your pants.
Larry, get into bed now.
Larry.
Larry. Larry.
Larry. Come on, Larry. Larry.
Before I go any farther with this story, I want to apologize to my father. He believed there were UFOs, and while I didn't mock him for his belief, my arrogant young mind was dismissive of that belief. With trillions of stars in the universe and incalculable planets, the conceit of human beings to assume Earth is the sole habitat of intelligent life, well, that surpasses conceit. It's stupid. But then more people are stupid than smart. Some psychologists claim that gratitude and its expression is the most basic demarcation that separates people from animals. I dispute that claim. I'm pretty sure that Moose, official guard dog of the Take No Shit Dojo, Moose does express gratitude. When I do him a solid, like a yummy treat, or take a nettle out of his paw, or cuddle him when he's shaking from the cold, his gratitude is tangible. But as smart as he is, I've never seen him lay on his back and stare at the heavens, trying to grasp his place in the cosmos. That's what really separates intelligent individuals from lower life forms and stupid people. You know them. You see them. They have the intellectual curiosity of a nematode. Their interests range from their stomachs to their genitals and back again. That's it. But they're not the first nor the only ones to reject the existence of other more advanced life forms or a supreme being. Plenty of highly credentialed scientists refuse to even consider the possibility of either. But I digress. I like to look at the night sky, and I'll pay extra attention when there's some special reason. As a kid in New York, one winter's night, some peculiar atmospheric conditions afforded New York City a display of the Aurora Borealis. My mom was a big sky watcher, and we stood in our tiny backyard staring at the spectacular light show in freezing cold until, well, it just faded away. But it made a big impression on me. The next sky event was on my first trip out west, which I chronicled in episode 15, Larry's Road Trip to Destiny. That's in the March 2017 tab at thatlarryshow.com. It's one of the most downloaded episodes ever. Now, on that adventure, I got a look at the night sky in the Sonoran Desert, just south of Tucson. I was 10 or 15 miles from the city, on a dirt road into the wilderness. I cut the engine, killed the headlights, and looked up. I had no telescope, no binoculars. And what I saw has never quite been replicated. That night sky was so thick with stars, it was difficult to find any blackness between them. It looked as if the sky was a glass dome, and someone had smashed a bag of flour over it. Shooting stars were not occasional or intermittent. They were constant. Every quadrant of the sky was streaked by them, all the time. As I lay back on the hood of that Ford, I felt as if, until that moment, I'd been partially blind and suddenly had full vision. And in a sense, that was true. I was awestruck. There's nowhere anywhere in the Northeast U.S. or any part of the country with higher humidity that can deliver such a clear view of the heavens. Daytime skies are a curtain above us that leave little choice but to focus on the mundane ablutions of life. But night in the desert, that curtain rolls back and really puts us in perspective. We are insignificant. We've heard the claim that there are more stars in the sky than grains of sand on every beach in the world. That sounds like exaggeration, doesn't it? Turns out it's an underestimate. Some science mathletes crunch the numbers, and according to their arithmetic, there are about 10,000 stars for every grain of sand on Earth's beaches. Lots of those stars have planets orbiting them, same as our little fireball in our sky. Who knows what the math on that might look like? So no matter how you view it, in the big, big picture, Earth is what? A molecule of belly button lint? That's probably an overestimate. And what does that make us? My grandpa used to say that earthlings are little more than fleas on a dog's back. Maybe that knowledge was the source of his zen-like equanimity. Some years after my western adventure at age 18, having moved to L.A., I discovered an area about an hour from City Lights. It's called the Vasquez Rocks. It's named after some bandito who hid out in them in the late 19th century. You've seen them in loads of movies, from westerns to sci-fi. They look really like a landscape from another planet. I'll post some pictures at the show page. So one day I read that the Leonids meteor shower was in Earth's vicinity. I called my buddy Julio, who was an avid sky watcher. He was from Caracas and promised he would deal with any of Vasquez's outlaws if they were still around. So we loaded some folding chairs and coats in the back of his car. I had a thermos of hot chocolate. Julio had a fifth of what he called Juancito, Johnny Walker Red. I promised to drive us home. There were a few other people up on those rocks, and as soon as the last glint of sunlight vanished from the horizon, the show began. And it was spectacular. Those meteors just kept coming. Some were so big that as they burned up, you could hear them hissing. So the Sonoran Desert and the Leonids meteor shower were parts one and two of my astronomical trifecta. I never imagined Sedona, Arizona, would be the location of the third and greatest revelation. I did an entire episode wrapped around a previous visit to Sedona, and it was none too complimentary. It's show number 159, entitled The Place That Bullshit Built. It's in the January 2019 tab at thatlarryshow.com if you want to have a listen. The Sedona area is spectacular. Perfect climate, clear skies, and red rock formations that, well, you have to see them to believe them. But the history of the place is rooted in New Age stuff, I suppose. Sedona is weird, beautiful, and goofy. Everyone is clad in either Patagonia sportswear ensembles or Cochise wear. Those who sport either are equally annoying. The Patagonia crowd are usually Sierra Club Nazis, and plenty of them are still masked up, even on hiking trails where everyone knows those spike proteins are lurking behind every cactus. If they don't wear a mask, they still signal who they are. They're the ones using ski poles to walk over flat ground. The Cochises, well, they think they can track a wolverine over running water or shapeshift into an invisible puma. They're usually doctors or accountants, but they're still nuts. Loiter anywhere in Sedona, and within 20 minutes, somebody will tell you they see shadow people or orbs. And if you feign interest, they'll go on to tell you that 9/11 was an inside job and it was done with sound waves. If you're still listening, they will tell you they can bilocate. I asked one if he knew alleged bilocator Padre Pio. He did not. I like good scenery, which is why many years ago I left monochromatic, filthy, dank New York for pastel and airy Los Angeles. Here I am surrounded by imbeciles who think they are actors, screenwriters, and filmmakers. When I've had enough of their lunacy, I should head for some place where folks are more cerebral. But all those places look like shit. So I drive 500 miles for more great scenery and shape-shifting kooks in Billy Jack hats. What's a Billy Jack hat? Visit the show page to see him and his silly lid. A dead actor named Tom Laughlin made one of the most unwatchable movies ever, Billy Jack. In it, he played a Navajo martial artist, as convincingly as Elizabeth Warren plays whatever the hell Indian she claims to be. The Billy Jack hat pretty much screams, "I got brain damage," especially on the doughy, pasty white heads of European ancestry. The town is paved with stores selling faux Indian art and turquoise bracelets and rings to complement the Billy Jack hats. There are aura photography studios, crystal healing clinics, energy balancing emporiums, chakra adjustment centers, past life regressions, medicine wheels. What's a medicine wheel? Listen to this audio of a woman skipping around some rocks in a circle, shaking a rattle, and then...
Now repeat after me. I open my heart. To the spirit of the South.
To the spirit of the South.
And the South sends me love.
And the South sends me love.
And the South sends me this message.
And the South sends me this message.
And now you say whatever comes into your heart at this time, even if it doesn't make sense to you.
Thank you. Thank you, birds. Thank you, laughter. Thank you, life.
you're ready, just walk around clockwise and really embody joy.
Not that clockwise, the other clockwise.
The other way, that way. Yep, perfect.
Now you're wondering, what the hell does this stuff have to do with UFOs? The answer is, you need to know this to understand the level of my skepticism when I embarked on a UFO night tour. There are plenty of those to be had in Sedona, and they're not cheap. As I followed the tour guide some miles out into the desert, for the dark sky, I was envisioning something like the medicine wheel girl experience. Maybe some rattles, feel the vibe, mumbo jumbo, and vibrational hocus pocus. We hove to in a remote area, unloaded folding chairs from tour guide's car, and sat in a circle as the last glow of sunlight disappeared below the horizon. To my surprise and delight, there was not a word of mumbo-jumbo. This woman was quite matter-of-fact and knowledgeable and explained all the man-made artifacts in the sky, each of which was visible to the naked eye. First, drones are illegal in Sedona at night. Flying one will get you $250,000 fine and jail time. Commercial aircraft are all over the sky, from two-seaters to jetliners, and they all have one thing in common. They fly straight, and they have slower blinking lights. There were plenty of military planes up there, too. They also fly straight mostly and continuously and have fast blinking lights. And satellites, well, they have no lights. You can see them only if they are reflecting the light of the sun. There are a shitload of them in orbit, over 4,500, and they only fly one way, straight. Once her introductory talk was over, she suggested we look up. She had a powerful green laser with a 50-mile range and pointed at suggesting we look in its vicinity, and that's when I saw a delta-shaped object. How big was it? Who knows? What was its altitude? Maybe somebody makes a rangefinder that could determine that, but I couldn't. But it was way the hell up there. The object had a reddish amber color and was clocking across the sky a lot faster than any satellite. But again, how that's perceived is subject to size and altitude. But it sure had my undivided attention. Suddenly, it stopped. Cold. Then zigged right. Stopped again and zagged left. They were right angle abrupt turns. No aircraft can do that. That's when I started shouting, "Holy shit," again and again, as I watched it jitterbug across the sky. Then it took a straight path to maybe 1 or 2 o'clock and vanished. When it winked out, I thought of my dad. He was smiling at me. I wished he was there to see it too and hear him tell me how right he was. Eventually, I had accepted the enormous likelihood that UFOs exist, but resigned myself to never being lucky enough to see one, and now I had. One of my daughters said it had a boomerang shape. I saw a delta. The tour guide explained that it wasn't quite what's termed a structural sighting, where they are close enough to make out definitive shapes in 3D, not just a length and width of an overhead view. She said she had over 60 structural sightings in the 12 years she's been conducting these tours. I'd always figured the best time for viewing would be, what, middle of the night when the sky is darkest, without a trace of sunlight, but that's wrong. The best time is about an hour after sundown when those objects catch the tangential sunlight. Soon she broke out the night goggles, which were mil-spec grade and cost about $4,000 a copy. Looking through those was impressive as hell. My kids spotted many more objects that behaved in the same manner, although they appeared as moving points of light without the shape of that first sighting. Some would also stop and start in the trajectory. Some would occasionally emit a burst of light as if what? Firing an afterburner? Or maybe it was a turn signal to their buddies. Within an hour, we'd seen quite a few of them, which is common but not guaranteed. She said that on some nights there were no sightings whatsoever. Kind of like fishing. Sometimes you get skunked. That desert was really cold. Everyone's fingers and toes were getting numb. Sedona claims to have the highest number of UFO sightings of any place on Earth. Is that because aliens like the scenery, or because so many people there are actively seeking them? Who knows? Who or what pilots those things? Are they on a mission, or just joyriding? When they disappear from view, is it a hyperspace thrust like the Millennium Falcon? Or are they beaming the whole shebang elsewhere, a la Star Trek? And why don't they contact us? Lots of people say they've been abducted. Certainly it's possible. But the level of intelligence to do what they do, well, that makes me guess they've no more interest in communicating with us than we would with earthworms. Driving back to the hotel, I was in a state of wonderment and knowing we are not alone. Somebody or something else is out there, and they know a hell of a lot more than we do. Are they at the top of the cosmic food chain? Now in daytime, when I look at blue sky or clouds, I see them differently. They're nice, but really, like fog in a window. Who knows what mind-blowing show is going on behind them as we crawl around this ball of dirt looking for parking spaces or lattes or punching the clock at jobs that become even more meaningless once you realize what's going on up there, way, way up there. There was a famous astronomer of the 20th century named Robert Jastrow. He was as big league as they get, a major figure at NASA and instrumental in the Apollo moon landings. Wikipedia labels him a climate change denier. He acknowledged that Earth was experiencing a warming trend, but said the cause was likely to be natural variation, which of course is correct. So commie Wikipedia gives him short shrift and fails to mention his most famous statement, which was this: "For the scientist who has lived by his faith in the power of reason, the story ends like a bad dream. He has scaled the mountains of ignorance. He is about to conquer the highest peak. As he pulls himself over the final rock, he is greeted by a band of theologians who have been sitting there for centuries." And what about all that other Sedona stuff? Chakras and regressions and magic crystals and vortexes. I tried the vortex thing. Went to the reputedly most powerful vortex and sat in the middle of it. Didn't feel a damn thing. Maybe you need a vortex guide. Without the UFO lady, I'd probably have missed that fantastic delta-shaped cosmic cruiser. We didn't see anything resembling a saucer, although plenty of people have. Others have seen cylinders, wedges, even ship-shaped objects. There was a sci-fi flick called Robinson Crusoe on Mars, and all their Martian spaceships were delta-shaped. Wonder where they got that idea. When you think about it, it's really amusing that screenwriters still dream up movies where aliens attack us. If they wanted us dead, we'd have been incinerated centuries ago. So they're definitely not hostile. Most likely, they just find us mildly amusing. To them, the high-tech crap we come up with is like the Play-Doh deformed dinosaur your three-year-old nephew made. But still, I hope they listen to this show. And in case they do, they're welcome to visit ThatLarryShow.com for hundreds more episodes as well as additional content and commentary. And if they like what they heard, maybe they'll click on the Patreon or PayPal button and make a donation. If I see any patrons with the names Klaatu or Gort, I'll know it's them. I'll see you next Wednesday or thereabouts. And until that time,
I bring you a warning. Every one of you listening to my voice, tell the world, tell this to everybody wherever they are. Watch the skies everywhere. Keep looking. Keep watching the skies.